Welcome to the call. Today, we're going to be focusing on three necessities for integrating NVC. And this particular class was inspired by a talk given by Marshall. Marshall being Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of Nonviolent Communication. During the call today, we'll explore these three necessities for integrating NVC. I've got three brief lessons with exercises planned. It's time to go ahead and dive in with what we call a self-connection exercise, kind of an opportunity to practice nonviolent communication with ourselves, just a chance to really just be with yourself and rest for a few minutes. And so you can do it with your eyes open or your eyes closed. I'll probably just close my eyes so I can concentrate a little bit more and connect with my heart. And so first, just bring your attention to your intention for doing the exercise. Why are you willing to try this exercise? And then to bring your attention into the present moment. And one great tip for presence is to just bring attention to the breath. You don't have to try to change anything about breathing. You're breathing automatically. Just notice your breathing. And then as you continue just to notice your breathing, open up your sense channels. What I mean by that is you're going to practice some observing. So beginning with just what you hear the sound of my voice. There may be other sounds that you hear in the background. There may be sounds in your own environment. Just allow yourself to be present to whatever sounds are coming in. And notice that it doesn't take any effort to do that. It just happens. And as you listen, you might also notice something else happening. You might notice yourself labeling the sounds that you hear. That's fine. That's a real human thing to do. Or you might also notice yourself evaluating the sounds that you hear. That's also a very human thing to do. But if you notice either of those things happening, just notice that as well. And then if you'd like, bring your attention just back to the simple openness to hear what you hear. Then quickly, we'll just go through the other senses to sharpen our observational skills. And notice whatever you see right now. Even if your eyes are closed, you're seeing something. So just notice what you see in the same way that you notice what you heard a moment ago. Just allowing images, colors to come into your awareness. Again, you might notice the same habits of labeling or evaluating what you see. Just notice that too, and then open up your vision again to what do you actually see right now? Then tune into what you're aware of in terms of your sense of touch. You might notice where gravity is meeting you, where you're sitting or standing. You might feel that sense of pressure. You might notice the texture of whatever your fingers are touching right now, or maybe the temperature of whatever you're touching. Maybe there's a sense of smoothness or roughness. Again, notice it's effortless to touch, just like it is to see or to hear. And then shift your attention to aromas, to your olfactory sense, your sense of smell. Just notice any fragrances that you're aware of in your environment. And finally, tune into the sense of taste. There may be a taste lingering in your mouth from something you recently ate or drank. Or maybe there's no real discernible taste there for you. So it's a little practice with observing. Now notice, as you shift your attention to your body, what sensations are you aware of in your body? We tend to group these sensations into two big chunks, sensations that are pleasant and sensations that are painful. Just scan your body and notice what sensations are present in your awareness right now. Nothing really to do about these sensations, unless there's something really uncomfortable and you're being guided to move. Rather, it's just an opportunity to notice sensations. To notice your capability of being able to shift where you place your attention. So for example, if I just invite you to notice your right foot, you're likely to suddenly become aware of your right foot in a way that maybe you weren't a moment ago. And likewise, if I invite you to notice the sensations in the core of your body, like your belly, or your chest, or your throat, notice what you notice there. And again, the invitation is to do it with an attitude of openness, of simply receiving whatever you sense in your body. You can also tune into emotions. Emotions flow through us like a kaleidoscope, constantly ever-changing pattern of emotion. Just notice what you're feeling now. Might just start with fine or neutral or bad. Or maybe you can fine-tune your emotional vocabulary and describe to yourself what your feelings are. Maybe you feel curious or sense of wonder about the class or this exercise. Maybe you're getting bored with the exercise and you're eager for something else. Or maybe you're just having a sense of openness. Whatever the emotion is for you, just allow it to be. Give yourself permission to have the emotions and the sensations that are present in your experience right now. And then consider the question that's at the heart of NBC for me. What's important to you right now? In other words, what needs bring you to this moment? You could have done 10,000 things today and you choose to be on this call right now. Why? What's that about for you? And then the final part of the exercise is to consider what would make your life wonderful right now. Is there something that you could do for yourself to make yourself more comfortable? Maybe adjust your body or get yourself a glass of water or stretch your legs or take a deep breath. Is there any request arising for you right now to make your life more wonderful than it already is? And if your eyes have been closed, you can allow them to open when you're ready. And thanks for trying the exercise out. We'll move into some of the topic that we're planning to cover. This is a three-part lesson called Three Necessities for Integrating Nonviolent Communication. Probably 10 years ago or so, I was at a session with Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of Nonviolent Communication, and he did a really cool exercise one day called What is NVC? And maybe we'll do that on another call. Part of the end of that was somebody asked him for feedback. Someone said, Marshall, do you have any tips for how to integrate NVC more fully into my life? And he said, yeah, I got the three tips that I could give you. And so I'm going to be sharing with you the tips that I heard from Marshall and how I've integrated it into my own life. The three basic headlines that Marshall used were, number one, spiritual clarity. Number two, community. And number three, practice, practice, practice. So my hope for you is that as we go through our process today, you'll get more clarity for yourself on the needs that deepen your own commitment to learning, doing, and being NVC. That you'll also get some next steps for yourself in giving and receiving support in community with others. And that if we have time, you'll also lead the call with an individually crafted practice to support you more fully integrating NVC in your life. So that's the agenda that we have planned. The first piece is remembering the purpose of nonviolent communication. For me, this is a critical piece. We did a class last month called the Zero Step, and a couple of Marshall's quotes really points to what I think Marshall was talking about when he was talking about spiritual clarity. So in other words, being really clear on what our intention is when we're using nonviolent communication. So let me read you this quote from Marshall. This intention is to create the quality of connection with other people and oneself that allows compassionate giving to take place. In this sense, it is a spiritual practice. All actions are taken for the sole purpose of willingly contributing to the well-being of ourselves and others. The primary purpose of nonviolent communication is to connect with other people in a way that enables giving to take place. Compassionate giving. It's compassionate in that our giving comes willingly from the heart. We're giving service to others and ourselves, not out of duty or obligation, not out of fear of punishment or hope for a reward, not out of guilt or shame, but for what I consider part of our nature. It's in our nature to enjoy giving to one another. So just take a moment and allow that to settle in for yourself. And to think about your intention for using nonviolent communication in your own life. And I'm just going to be quiet for 30 seconds as you sit with the question, what's your purpose in using nonviolent communication? Then I'd like to hear from a few of you, if you're willing to share, how you would put it in your own words. What's your purpose for using nonviolent communication? What's the spiritual clarity about for you? So if you'd like to write down what you came up with for yourself, that'd be cool. You could always change it later. Who would be willing to share something that comes up for you about the purpose of using NVC?
For me, it came up as to heal and resolve unresolved trauma, to find healing.
To find healing, yeah. So purpose really is about really creating a quality of connection with yourself in order to support your own deepening well-being and healing.
And that of others. There's something about the reciprocity and mutuality. It's not enough for it to just be me.
So you realize that as you do this inner work on yourself, that it actually affects others, and you also want to be there to support others in their healing.
In a big way, yeah.
Thank you.
And I celebrate that. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Who else would be willing to share? What's your purpose in using nonviolent communication?
I was hoping for deeper connection, and that's my target goal, and with the objective of reaching an understanding, you know, so that we can understand each other better. Thank you.
Thank you. So connection and the service of understanding. Your microphone is live.
Hello, I'm a military brat. My father used to be a three-star general, so I was really born and raised up in wolf language. I feel that it is very important within families and friends and also in the job to start to communicate with nonviolent communication. I think this is the way to peace, not to react to what is coming from the outside, but to really stay within yourself, your heart, and communicate from there. And I always tell this everybody around me. I introduce the nonviolent communication.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope you get a chance to share it with your dad, too. I'm really curious about what conversations around the dinner table might be like in your house.
They changed totally.
You'll bet. Yes, thank you. And let's see here. Your microphone is live.
My purpose for living life of nonviolent communication is to enable me to connect with myself and also to connect with others, so that in my relationship with myself and others, I will be authentic.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing. Your microphone is live.
I have a few goals and few purposes. And the first is to be able to honestly express myself. And the second is to achieve greater connectivity with other people. Also, I want to have nurturing relationship with others. And I'm really passionate about cooperation. So I want to have more cooperation with others.
Thank you. Your microphone is live.
For me, it's like an anchor to do what I always have loved doing, even since I was a kid. Just always loved it when there was mutual understanding and I always sought it. And now it's kind of a framework and an anchor, kind of a touchstone for it. So it's allowed me to deepen into that and strengthen my ability to seek and find mutual understanding.
Wonderful. And your microphone is open.
I've resonated with a lot of these answers. I've been doing NVC for a while, and it's really been revolutionary in relationships and connecting with people. And right now, I'm really into the self-empathy part of it and using that tool of self-compassion to kind of create peace within myself, basically, so that I can connect with other people. That's my focus right now.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. So I have a couple of things now I want to add to this idea about remembering. So my encouragement is to help yourself to find a way to express this purpose as briefly as possible, so that what you can kind of put it into your back pocket and pull it out as a strategy for moments when you forget the purpose. Some of our students actually make their little purpose statement and they put it on their refrigerator, or they'll make a little wallet card so that when they open up their wallet and pull some money out, they just see that little reminder there. Other people make little cards that just have words for human needs on them and sprinkle them around the house. Anything that you can do to awaken this needs consciousness is useful. And then to actually formalize a practice can also be helpful. And what I mean by formalize a practice is to start the day, or close to the beginning of the day, find some sort of a reminder for yourself that helps you to live in this consciousness of compassionate connecting. And so for me, for example, what I do is after I get up in the morning and do the things you need to do before you actually get out of bed, and long before breakfast, I make myself a cup of warm, raw cacao. It used to be coffee. And now it's a hot cacao with a tablespoon of butter, which sounds very, very strange. But until you try it, don't judge it too harshly. It is so creamy, delicious, warm, and it just kind of is a way of lubricating a sense of warmth in my body. And the butter, you can also use coconut oil. But the butter or the coconut oil is also super good for the brain. Brain really operates on fat. And we've all been told, you know, to avoid fat our whole lives. And I never took that advice. I used to eat a pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream every day. And as you can see, I'm still kind of a skinny guy. And so I never bought into that fat thing. But so anyway, I had this warm, delicious drink. Doesn't have to be what I drink, but just something warm to cultivate the sense of warmth in my body. Then I find something to read that's going to be super, super wholesome. It'll be a book. It might be some Rumi poetry. It might be my favorite NVC book that I'm reading right now. It could be some other spiritual support. It could even be a novel, as long as the novel had this kind of theme of connection woven into it. And I do that for maybe 10 or 15 minutes to just kind of saturate my heart and my mind with this remembering. And this is institutionalized at the international intensive trainings that we do, and also any other trainings that Jory and I do on an ongoing basis. We always begin with some kind of a remembering, something that awakens the heart to the purpose of doing nonviolent communication. So I wonder if anybody else has any suggestions on any way of remembering that works for you, that you can suggest to us, and let us know what you do that might be different than what I've said. What do you do to support yourself in remembering first thing in the day? What do you do to cultivate this memory is remembering. If you think about it, this word remember is a great word that Marshall came up with or adapted from somebody, to remember. Re in English, re is the prefix that means you're doing something again. And membering means to kind of bring our members back together again, to kind of pull our various parts of our life into a coherent whole. And your microphone's open.
For me, it's meditation, about 15 minutes, 10 minutes of meditation in the morning, followed by some exercise. I have a gym here where we live and get on some machine, and that really gets me connected to myself. Those are two things that help me get connected with myself. And then I also have some recordings of Marshall Rosenberg that I listen to in the morning when I'm on the elliptical machine.
Cool. Anybody else got any ideas you want to share with the rest of us?
This just started since the intensive. So it's really new. And I have been doing this every day the past week. And there's a song that we learned in our morning meditation among the larger group. And it's a little song.
And you're going to sing it for us?
I'll try. Every little cell in my body is healthy. Every little cell in my body is healthy. I'm so glad every little cell in my body is well. I know it sounds silly, but when I remember that I am joyful and I am cellular, then I can make mindful choices. And I've been the last week waking up singing that, and it's helped determine my day.
Wonderful. Hearing Lynn's inclination to do this first thing in the morning, it reminds me of the last part of my strategy for remembering is to do it at the end of the day. So I'm lying in bed and I'm inviting sleep to come, and I'm doing some sort of a remembering process as I go to sleep. It might be a gratitude process, being grateful for the things that have happened during the day and the needs of mine that have been met, and just savoring those needs as I fall asleep. Or it might be something that I'm working on in terms of a practice that I want to work on the next day. So I just go to sleep thinking about NVC in that kind of daydreamy state. And then what happens most of the time is the first thought I have upon awakening, even if it's at 3:15 in the morning and nature is calling, my first thought is remembering NVC, remembering my practice. And I found that very, very helpful to do this kind of mental practice just before going to sleep at night. So let's move on to the second thing, which is about community. The second kind of huge strategy for integrating nonviolent communication is to have a sense of community with other people who share your practice. And with things like NVC Academy, around nowadays, you guys have it so much easier than when I was first starting NVC back in 2001. So now there's all kinds of online forums. There's Facebook there, so you can have a kind of instant community sharing various aspects of nonviolent communication on Facebook or other social media. But there's still nothing like creating community at home. We were very, very fortunate when we started our nonviolent communication practice, we being Jory and me, that we lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and there had already been an ongoing practice group there for about 8 years. And this practice group had no leader. It was what was called a leaderful practice group. And I didn't know a single soul that was in that group other than Jory. So it was suddenly a way to meet other people that had been practicing NVC for a while and to learn from them. We would meet once a week for about 2 hours. And the thing that was so cool about it and what made it leaderful was some strategies that we used to that really supported everyone taking responsibility and having a chance for leadership. So we had a sign-up sheet in our community practice group, and there were, I believe, three different roles for that you could sign up for. And you didn't have to sign up for a role. You know, there were about 18 people in the group, of which at any given time, maybe 10 people would come to the group. But the three different roles that people would sign up for, one role was the person who kind of did the logistics, logistical pieces that were necessary. We rented a room at various places. When we first started, I believe it was like at a community room of a local apartment complex or something like that. And so someone volunteered to make sure to get the key and to get there 15 minutes early and set the chairs up in a circle and make sure the lights were on and the heat was on and teapot was full and that sort of thing. So that was one role, is just to kind of hold the physical space together and take responsibility for that. And then the second role was for the facilitator. And the facilitator was someone who had an idea of the whole overall agenda of the evening and would be willing to keep track of time and to tell us where we were on our agenda and to mark the transitions from one part of the agenda to the other, so forth. So they were the person that were kind of holding the container space for the meeting to occur. And then the third role was someone was willing to offer a brief lesson about some aspect of nonviolent communication. And by brief, we meant 10 minutes or less. And so maybe someone had a brief lesson about keeping observations distinct from evaluations, or maybe a brief lesson about empathy or how to share honesty with NVC, some sort of brief lesson. And then if you could come up with some sort of a practice that went along with your lesson, then you could extend it for 10 additional minutes. So 10 minutes of a lesson and questions and answers about the lesson, and then 10 minutes to send people out into practice, whatever it was that you were hoping that they would get a chance to practice. So that took about maybe 45 minutes of the 2 hours. The rest of the meeting was we did like a check-in in the middle. Who wants to do what now? And so it was self-organized. Some people wanted to practice giving and receiving empathy, so they would say that, and they maybe would pair up and go do that. Other people maybe wanted to have a discussion about some aspect of NVC in a more deep way, and so they maybe go out to that. Other people might maybe got Grok cards or the game that Sir Hart came up with, the No Fault Zone game, or some other NVC-based game. So other people might go out and play that game for 45 minutes or something like that. So the sky was the limit. Anything that people wanted to propose, as long as they could find somebody else to do it, that's great. And then at the very end of the meeting, with about 15 minutes were left, we would all come back together again in community and just do a checkout, say what we are celebrating and mourning about our time together. So it was a very, very powerful strategy. And if you have a question, how do I get one going? Well, a couple of suggestions for how to start building community is to start with a book club. Book clubs are really safe. And you could just put up a notice that you're studying nonviolent communication, the language of life by Marshall Rosenberg, and stick it up at your church or at the local health food store or someplace like that, chiropractor's office or other health practitioners. Just put some little flyers out inviting people to do it and see if you can gather people to do a book study. And then maybe just read one chapter a week and get together and talk about it. And that might evolve into a more of a leaderful group in a place where there isn't very much NVC practice yet. The second part you could do if you're ready to move beyond a book study, what Jory and I did was we used Marshall's book, NVC Language of Life, and we also bought copies of Lucy Liu's companion workbook. And we did that, I think, about 25 or 30 times. We went through that book 25 or 30 times, gathering together small groups of people, anywhere from about 6 to 18 people. And we would go through the book chapter by chapter. And that companion workbook is really set up to support you in making it easy to have a practice group. The whole first half of the group is sort of how to structure a practice group and how to the kind of the pitfalls, how to handle conflict in the practice group, and so forth. And the second half of the book is all lessons. So everyone's going to read chapter one, and then there's like some study guide questions and some exercises all built in. So Lucy Liu has done all the work for us, and she made it really, really easy to have a practice group. The name of the book is the NVC Companion Workbook, and it's by Lucy Liu, L-E-U, is the author of that book. So anybody else have any ideas on how to build community that I haven't mentioned? I'd love to learn from you as well. Anybody have any ideas on what's worked for you for building community? And then I have a couple other more ideas at the end here.
I now study in basics of NVC from Anne Walton, but I know that there's guys in Ukraine who gather together one time per week using the Zoom. They gather together, they discuss what's happening in their lives, some situations, and how they applying NVC, some tough moments, and so that's great. So it's not necessary to rent a room or something like this. You can meet each other in internet. So yeah.
Beautiful. Yes, that's so great to have something like Zoom and be able to meet. It's good for the planet too, because we don't have to drive our cars or whatever to get to the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that idea. Although I am a sucker for human connection and human touch. We have been involved in a human practice group since the year 2001. So now it's 2017. So we're in our 16th year of having practice groups. We do one here in Maui once or twice a week, sometimes even three times a week. There's nothing like getting together and having that sense of human warmth, connection, and empathy. Something that was fun for us to do was to have, we called it the video practice group. And what we did is we got Marshall's DVDs or his tapes or whatever it was. And we would all gather together. This was before I was a trainer. And so we didn't have a trainer in our neighborhood. And so we wanted to really utilize Marshall whenever we could. He was always available on these DVDs. And so the way that we would work is we would start with like a little check-in, saying what our name was, where we were from, and why we were there. Three basic questions that can do a check-in. Then we would put the DVD into the machine and just push play. And the rule was, or not the rule, but the way we played the game was that we would just watch the DVD until somebody got stimulated. And it could be because they had a question and they noticed a feeling of curiosity and they wanted to maybe get some support from other people and get some clarity. And so we would pause the DVD there and talk about their question. Or maybe sometimes some of these programs that Marshall had, he would be giving empathy to somebody else. And so maybe someone would notice Marshall just did something that was particularly notable or interesting. And so we would push pause there and we would talk about what Marshall did and why we thought it was effective or what he did and why we didn't think it was effective or whatever came up for us. So we would actually look at Marshall's strategies for giving empathy or a teaching piece and then give each other feedback about it. And then the third thing that might happen is Marshall's giving the empathy for somebody to somebody. And let's say they're recounting something that was kind of traumatic for them. And so somebody in our group might have had a similar trauma to the person that Marshall is working with. And so we would pause the tape there and just move into empathy for the person that was stimulated. That would take the whole rest of the meeting, was just us being able to be an empathic connection with our friend who maybe was experiencing some pain. Any questions or comments from anybody? Okay, not seeing any questions. Then we'll move on to the bulk of the rest of our time. We have something kind of exciting that I think planned for you. For this, it's great to have a piece of paper. And this third chunk is about creating your own practice. So we've covered the spiritual clarity part. We covered the community part, and now we'll be developing, giving you some guidance on how to create your own practice. And you'll be doing some of this work in a small group towards the end. But in the meantime, get yourself a piece of paper, hold it long ways, you know, tall ways. So, and then just draw a line down the middle. So you'll end up with two columns. And label the column on the left, label that strength. S-T-R-E-N-G-T-H, strength. And on the other side, the other column, label it edge, E-D-G-E. So you'll have strength on one side and edges on the other side. So what I mean by a strength, Jory and I, along with two other MVC trainers, came up with something called the Pathways to Liberation Matrix of Self-Assessment. This is a list of 28 different NBC skills. And we're going to be using 10 of those skills today, just because, not to overwhelm you with all 28 of them, but we'll be using 10 of those skills. And the way the matrix is set up, there's the name of the skill, a definition of the skill, and then four levels of development for utilizing the skill. The four levels of development are basically, what? I've never heard of that, so I'm unconsciously incompetent. Maybe the skill is called something called observing. I've never heard of NBC and I've never heard of observing. So I don't know how to do that because I don't even know what it is. So that's the first level of all skill development, always starts with unconscious incompetence. I don't know how to do something, but I don't know what it is. And then eventually you learn about a skill. And by the way, this is as true for a sports-related skill as it is for a NBC skill or any kind of a skill. Human beings go through this particular process of learning no matter what. So the second level is conscious incompetence. And conscious incompetence basically just means now you know that you don't know how to do something, that you don't have the capability of maybe being able to keep clear a distinction between an observation and observation mixed with evaluation. Now you know what it is, but you really just don't know how to do it yet. But you know that you don't know how to do it. And if you keep practicing, then eventually you become what's called consciously competent. In other words, now you know how to do something in a competent way if you do it with a certain quality of intentionality, focus, and so forth. So, for example, if empathy was a skill and you were at this level of conscious competence and someone in your practice group started expressing some pain, you could find all the skills in you that would help you to create that empathic connection with this other person. But it would take a lot of effort and focus on your part. You might have to be reminding yourself of things. You might even need some notes in front of you, like a need sheet. So you're still at a level of learning where you are getting better and better at it, but it's certainly not at some sort of an integrated level yet. That's the third stage of learning a skill. And then the fourth stage, someday magic happens, and it's called unconscious competence. And so when you're at the level of unconscious competence, suddenly you're doing something that you would call an NVC skill without trying to do it. I remember one time this happened for me. I was a couple of years into NVC, and I ended up in the backseat of the car with a screaming three-year-old. I believe he was about 3 years old at the time. And he was just freaking out. And without really even trying or, you know, kind of doing anything, I just looked at him and I said, "Zach, sounds like you're really, really mad." And he said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "I bet you were really disappointed that we had to leave the park." He said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "I'm guessing you just really needed to play." He said, "Yeah, yeah." And then he fell asleep. Of course, there was huge relief in the car that the cranky three-year-old had now gone asleep. But I was just celebrating that I suddenly realized I'd used NVC with a three-year-old and actually created this connection with him in an empathic way, and I didn't have to have my notebook out trying to coach myself in how to do it. So it was this heartfelt and visceral sense of having a layer of competence that I had no idea that I had. So it was a very, very sweet moment to pay attention in your life, to notice these moments of unconscious competence. And so that's what I mean by a strength. A strength is something that you have some access to unconscious competence sometimes. Of course, nobody has access to these NVC skills all the time. We all seem to be somewhat resource dependent. When we're well fed, well rested, and the other needs are met, then it's pretty easy to practice NVC. And if we're tired, hungry, and so forth, then it makes it very challenging to use NVC. So the idea is that you judge yourself in a life-serving way to find some strengths that you have. And I already know you already have at least one of the strengths. Everybody, I'm totally confident, has one of these NVC strengths. Then we're going to be looking at these other nine skills besides, and we're going to be looking for an edge. Now, an edge is something that's anywhere in that range between conscious incompetence and unconscious competence. So, for example, you might already know without me even saying it that you have an edge around making requests. That's very common in the NVC community. People really get this feelings and need stuff. But when am I supposed to make a request? How am I supposed to do that? I have no idea what request is supposed to do. It makes this, you know, you have all this kind of stuff about requests. And so that might be your edge. And so what I'm going to do in just a minute is I'm going to go through this list of just 10 NVC skills. And as I read the list of skills, I ask you to just do a quick check, a quick body-based check. Don't go to your head. I mean, some of you might just go to your head anyway and try to analyze this. But go with that first gut feeling and cut yourself some slack. You actually have probably more skill than you're going to give yourself credit for. So don't let this be a chance to really beat yourself up. Let this be a chance to celebrate yourself, to actually have some compassion for how much you've already been working on integrating nonviolent communication into your life. You hear me say one of these words that you resonate with as a strength, then just mark that in the strength column, strength. And then if you hear another one that your body says, "Oh boy, I really want to learn that." You know, you just maybe notice a feeling in the body of emptiness or excitement or some sort of felt sense in your body that you're eager to learn that. Mark that as an edge. For other skills, you won't notice anything. It'll just be kind of a neutral feeling. So you can just let those go. So you'll end up at the end of the exercise, probably, with at least one strength and one or two edges, maybe even nine edges. But like I said, don't be so hard on yourself. Just try to find your light and shine it on yourself. And the skill that I know that you already have is because I'm pretty sure I can tell everybody who has their screen on, you're looking at me and you can hear me. And so you're all practicing the skill of presence. Presence is something that all human beings have. And although we can develop our presence, it's not something that we really have to try to do. We can easily flow our attention towards something of interest to us and be present with it. So you're all here on the call. You're all listening to my voice and you're all having an experience of presence right now. We define presence as being attentive to what's happening right now, not lost in thinking, emotional reactions, etc. And so even if you started daydreaming right now, like let's say, you know, you started thinking about your grocery list instead of what I'm talking about, you would notice eventually that you were checked out. It's your presence that notices that. I call it giraffe presence. There's this observing presence that is always within us, and it helps us get back to the present moment. You can only be present in the present moment. So presence is it creates this virtuous feedback loop of noticing that you're present. That brings you into presence and that you're right here, right now, and that cultivates more presence, and that deepens your sense of being right here, right now, and it just continually deepens the sense of presence. So I encourage you all to put the word presence in the strength column if it resonates for you as a strength. So now I'll go through. I'm going to say the name of the skill, and then I'm going to read the definition. And while I'm reading the definition, just mark it as either a strength or an edge for yourself. Oh, there's one hand up.
Thank you very much. I didn't really understand your explanation of what you mean by edge.
An edge is a skill that you haven't developed as fully as you would like. Is that clear?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for asking. Not seeing any other questions. That's a great question. I love those questions for clarity. Okay, here we go. The first skill, presence. Being attentive to what is happening right now. Not lost in thinking, emotional reactions, etc. Mark it as a strength or an edge. Second skill, observing, noticing and possibly describing our sensory and mental experiences and distinguishing these experiences from the interpretations we ascribe to them. Observing. Mark that as a strength or an edge and move on to feelings awareness. The ability to identify and experience our physical sensations and emotions. Strength or edge, feelings awareness. Next skill, self-acceptance. Accepting oneself with unconditional caring. Self-acceptance. Next skill, needs consciousness. Awareness of and the willingness to honor needs, the essential, universal, elemental qualities of life, like sustenance, love, and meaning. Needs consciousness. Next skill, recovering from reactivity. Recovering from reactivity. Reactivity is the internal resistance to what is. Recovery is letting go of that resistance. Recovering from reactivity. Next skill, making requests. The willingness to ask for what one wants with openness to any response, not attached to any particular outcome. Making requests. Next skill, empathy. Being present with another's experience with unconditional acceptance of the person. Empathy. Next skill, honest self-expression. Owning one's experience and having the willingness to express authentically without blame or criticism. Honest self-expression. And finally for today, patience. Remaining spaciously present when one feels stress. An ability to be with one's own reactions without acting out of them. Patience. So then just put your pencil down or pen or whatever you're writing with and go to your own heart right now and notice how you feel having had this experience. Noticing how your body is reacting, any physical sensations or emotions that are present. Link those feelings to your own needs. What needs are you noticing right now? And then find out if there's anything that you'd like to ask. Do you have a request right now that you'd like to ask me or anybody else on the call before we take the next step?
Hi, Jim. Thanks. Could you talk about the definition of needs consciousness again?
Sure. I said the definition for needs consciousness, awareness of and the willingness to honor needs, the essential, universal, elemental qualities of life. What needs consciousness means to me in a nutshell is just having needs in my awareness from moment to moment. The question that's up front for me when I'm in needs consciousness is who needs what right now? Does that help?
A little.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
It's great that if you have a question like that come up, it's a great indicator of an edge.
Absolutely. And that's where I put it, was on that group of edge, and that's where it is.
Exactly. If there's any kind of a sense of lack of clarity or challenge or even, that's a great place to put an edge.
Yeah, because it also goes into needs of self as well as needs of others. And that's where I went, okay, this is an edge.
Yes. Yeah. What I've learned, I mean, I think you're actually pointing to part of the rubric, the kind of development of skills that we start out not knowing what a need is. Then we start dividing needs into my needs and your needs, met needs and unmet needs. We kind of have a dualistic point of view about needs, which is perfectly great for learning and understanding. So we can make some discernments between needs and strategies, for example. And then eventually, in my experience, needs become the energy that permeates the entire universe. And I can't tell where my needs end and your needs begin, for example. There's no boundary between our needs because we all have this need for well-being. So that's kind of how I experience it as I go through my NBC journey.
I'm really curious to explore the awareness of the needs around me and my own needs as they arise and understanding how they can meet.
Beautiful. So you're actually helping me, I think, right now to do the next step, which is how to develop a practice. And so I'm guessing that you had presence as one of the strengths. Would that be accurate?
Well, yeah. And I have feelings awareness as well.
Perfect. You've got two strengths, presence and feelings awareness. And then you've got one edge. And that, in this case, is needs consciousness. This is something that I learned from my study of positive psychology. Which is a kind of a close cousin to NBC. And one of the things I learned in positive psychology is that we have incredible resources that we can call on when we want to learn a new skill. And these skills are the skills that we already have, our strengths. And there are other strengths that we have. Some of our personality characteristics might be strengths and so forth that positive psychology talks about. But in this particular case, we're going to actually be utilizing the strength that we have that we celebrate in our lives. In this case, for you, it's presence, which is really being focused on the present moment, and feelings awareness, to tune in to what's going on in the body and to be able to note those physical sensations. And that's such a powerful one for your edge, which you identified as needs consciousness, because feelings are the gateway to needs. They're like the portal or the doorway for needs. And so by having both presence, which brings us into the present moment, and then attention on our feelings, then we can begin to build our strength around empathy. So I'll just ask you to consider for a moment, what ideas do you have about how you could utilize presence and feelings awareness that might support you in growing your needs consciousness?
Well, you just said it. that underneath every feeling is a need. So as I'm having a feeling and I'm fully present, because I did that first zero step, you know, where I'm staying connected to why am I here and what do I want to see, you know, as the outcome. My need is always to connect. I'm aware of feelings and I'm present. So what is the need that's underneath there? So I can start cultivating and seeing what are those beautiful needs underneath the feelings.
Yeah.
Expressed in an angry way. There's still a need that's expressed.
Yeah. So your practice, the first building block of your practice is utilizing your strength and then doing an inquiry, something like what's my feeling telling me is important to me right now? And what you're talking about is what I would call an on-the-spot practice. Something that you can do at any moment of the day that you become aware of your feeling. You actually let the feeling that arises in your body become like an alarm clock. And the alarm clock is something that awakens you to a particular question, and you'll find your own question. But for me, it's like, who needs what right now is the question that I ask. Who needs what right now? And just by focusing my mind on that question, I will automatically try to answer it. That's just the way our brains work. If you ask somebody a question, they'll try to answer it. So if I say to all of you on the call, you know, what are you needing right now? You'll naturally go, well, what am I needing right now? Well, actually, I'm actually feeling a little bit of pressure in my bladder, and I'm glad there's only about a half an hour left on the call, and I'm going to need to do something about that. And I'm also noticing some excitement that this came up with Lynn, and that's around my need for connection and contribution. So any moment, an on-the-spot practice like that. So thank you for that example.
Yeah.
Your microphone is live.
Please, could you explain recovery from reactivity?
Yes, recovering from reactivity basically just means, in other words, sometimes we get triggered. We feel separate from another person. We're reacting rather than responding. We might feel angry. We might feel guilty. We might feel ashamed. We might feel annoyed or irritated. So we have some kind of a feeling that comes up that's uncomfortable to us. And then we might have some thoughts that go with the feeling. Something like, you know, some judgmental thought, this person's an idiot or I'm an idiot or whatever the judgment is. That's what reactivity is an uncomfortable feeling plus some sort of a thought of resistance. And then recovering from reactivity is noticing that that's happening. I'm noticing that I'm disconnected right now. I'm noticing that I'm angry or irritated or annoyed. So that's the first step. And then the second step for me would be to give myself permission as a human being to feel my feelings. Human beings get triggered every day. There's no such thing as a human being that doesn't get triggered. And so I'm in the boat with all the rest of us. I get triggered sometimes. And so I give myself permission to be a human being and feel my feelings. And so that awakens that skill of feelings, awareness, and self-acceptance. And then the third step for me is to extend that permission to the other person involved. Usually when I get triggered, it's because somebody else has said or done something that has stimulated me. And so I realize that they have done what they've done out of the service of their own needs, that they're doing the best they can to navigate what's happening in the moment and to give them permission to be a human being too. And then the fourth step that I usually use when I'm trying to recover from reactivity is to think of something that I feel grateful for. It doesn't have to be about the other person or it doesn't have to be about myself. Sometimes it's as simple as I'm grateful that I have access to a clean glass of water, or I have access to a nice deep breath right now, or I can get up and leave this room, or whatever I feel grateful for. And then that starts a process of being back to being present again, actually recovering from my reactivity and no longer suffering in the moment. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Great. So I think that clears the board of questions. So here's your next assignment is I'm going to put you into small groups of three or four. The idea is that you support each other in coming up with a practice. Here's the questions to consider in your small group is what's your, to share with the other people. Hi, my name is Jim. My strength is presence and my edge is honest self-expression. And as I sit with that strength and that edge, one way I can think of to practice is, and then you fill in the blank for your own answer. What's some ideas you have about how you can support yourself on a daily basis to practice using your skill of presence in order to express yourself with more authenticity or honesty. And so there'll be four or five people in a room, and I'll be back in 15 minutes. So here in the main room, we can talk amongst ourselves here if you would like. I will just share with you briefly about a practice that I'm working with right now. My skill is presence. And although I'm pretty good at it, I want to get better at feelings awareness, a particular aspect of feelings awareness. And the particular aspect of feelings awareness that I want to fine tune is what's going on in my face. I learned from my friend and fellow trainer, Sarah Payton, that the sensations we feel on our face can be strong clues to what's going on in our heart. And so the practice that I want to suggest for myself, and this will be a practice that I will do a couple of times a day, first thing in the morning and last thing before bed, and then at least one other time during the day. Probably I can sense that a time that'd be really good for me to practice this would be just before meal times, because it's a time when I tend to bring a sense of presence and purpose and connection to my meals. And so being able to have more of self-awareness during those moments could be quite helpful. And so the way that the practice would go would be, I just notice my breath, and then I allow my breath to awaken in me sensations in my face. So just bring attention to my face. And then the rest of the practice is just to describe to myself what I'm noticing in terms of sensations in my face. So for example, I notice kind of a warmth, a warm band across my forehead, a little bit of a tickling sensation right around the middle of my forehead. I notice a little bit of tension in my jaw. I notice kind of a fullness or a warmth in my chin. It's interesting. And then I notice just a sense of moistness around my eyes. It's kind of I'd call it a sweet feeling in my eyes. Just a softness. So I can imagine doing this practice, as I said, two or three times a day, last thing before I go to bed, and also first thing in the morning, and then at meal times. So anybody else want some support in coming up with a practice? Any of you like some support in doing this?
Yeah, developing the practice, looking at honest self-expression.
Okay, honest self-expression. I'm an expert on having that as an edge. It's been my lifelong edge. What did you identify as a strength?
I think I have some strength within presence and observing. You know, then you think more and you think, oh, well, I wasn't all that present during whatever. Just even thinking about my day. Maybe I don't have any strengths and I just have edges, but I still think that I do have that observation. I can pick up feelings in others and I can make empathic responses.
That's a perfect strength to use for honest self-expression. Really glad you identified that. So just imagine that you're in a conversation with somebody else. You've got a couple of things going on in terms of your own strengths. You're present to what your own experience is, and you're present to what's going on for the other person. You're noticing, you're able to make observations. You're able to see clearly what's happening and hear clearly what's going on. And then you also have this strength of being able to sense what might be going on empathically with the other person. And so one practice that I can imagine would be to actually honestly express either what you're noticing about your observations or what you're noticing about your feelings and needs guesses about the other person. Both would be, for me, opportunities to express your own authenticity. So for example, if I'm with another person and I'm wanting to practice this honesty and the other person says something like, I really had a terrible day at work today. My boss just came in and he wasn't happy with the report that I produced for him and he scolded me. So I'm listening to this person and I'm really present with them and I'm catching that they're upset, that they're feeling scared and angry. So maybe I just acknowledge. I notice that what I can do is honestly acknowledge what's going on for them. So I might say, so it sounds like you're feeling angry and scared about what happened at work. And then they say, they respond to that and they say, well, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I mean, I did the best job I could on this project, and yet nothing, you know, I didn't get any credit for it. I didn't get any gratitude. And so then I'm doing the same thing. I'm noticing my empathic guesses, and my intuition tells me, oh, I could actually express my empathic guess here. And so I could say something like, oh, so you're just really needing a sense of being acknowledged for the amount of work that you put into that. And they say, yeah. So in other words, I'm just using what I already know about empathy and feelings and needs, and just coaching myself, maybe with an encouragement. It's okay to acknowledge this, Jim. It's okay to actually connect here. So I might just install this little okay voice in my head, so that when I'm involved in these kinds of conversations, I'll actually make some of these empathy guesses. So that's one example of a practice that I might use. Does that make sense to you?
Thank you for all of that. I'll continue to work with that and see then when I get into a situation. I'll have to practice so that I will try to think about that, so that as I'm in those situations tomorrow, that I can think about that a little more.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. Like as I'm falling asleep at night, I'll consider, okay, tomorrow I'm going to have interactions with other people, and I would really like to show up for myself and speak up more for my own needs. So, for example, I know I'm going to be with such and such a friend, and I'll just do a mental rehearsal of having a conversation with this friend and then doing exactly what we just practiced, in terms of listening to them, making some empathy guesses, and then checking in to see if it's safe for me to actually express my own feelings and needs and actually just do this practice. Or I can also recommend doing it as a journaling process. It's another way to practice it.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else want some advice or have something to share in here?
I'd love to get a personal practice out of this.
So what did you identify as a strength?
Observing.
Observing. Great. Observing. A wonderful strength to have. It's the foundational skill of all NVC besides presence. So observing, it's also quite a challenge, as you know, to stay in that observing consciousness. So that's a wonderful strength that you have. And what's the edge that you wanted to work on?
Needs consciousness.
Needs consciousness. Great. So then the question that you sit with is, how could I use my strength of observing to support my edge of needs consciousness? So my process for coming up with these practices is I just ask myself the question, what could I do to use this strength of observing to help me navigate this edge around needs consciousness? As I do that, an idea pops into my mind. That's just the way our mind is designed to work. We make an inquiry and our mind goes to work and answers the question. And it may not happen immediately. It might happen later, especially for some reason in the presence of water. When you take a hot shower or a warm bath, and that sometimes really stimulates new ideas of questions that you've asked yourself. But in this case, if I'm thinking, okay, how could I use observing to support me in needs consciousness? Okay, so I can see that I could set my iPhone to go off and have an alarm once per hour. And when the alarm goes off, then I actually turn the alarm off, and then I just observe my environment. I notice what I see, and then I make some guesses about what needs are active in terms of what I see. So for example, if my little alarm goes off and I'm standing in line at a fast food joint waiting for food, and I look around and I say, oh, who needs what right now? And I see the person cooking in the kitchen, they're scurrying around, and I'm imagining, oh, they're just really trying to contribute. They're actually trying to be efficient and give us the gift of the food that they're offering. And I notice that the person taking the orders is furiously scribbling on her notepad and tapping the keyboard. And I wonder, what's going on in her? What needs is she trying to meet? Well, she's actually trying to perform her job with some competence, and she's trying to support the customers and getting the food that they want. And then I might look at my own needs. So what's going on in me right now? Well, I'm noticing that I'm feeling hungry and needing sustenance. By then, you know, that's about probably as good as I am to make three needs guesses in the moment, and then I move back into life. That's one idea of a practice. How does that sound to you?
Yes, it's very useful. Thanks.
Great. Okay, some other folks have finished their group and they're rejoining us now. So let's hear some feedback from some folks. I'd love to hear from a few of you about what you learned about creating a practice for yourself. And it can be, by the way, it's a celebration in mourning. Celebration means you get to celebrate the needs that were met for working together in a small group like that. And mourning is making equal space for needs that may not have been met by doing the practice. What was it like for you?
I'm just really appreciating being in a small group for that exercise, because I find it actually helps me to articulate to another person what my intention is. So just saying out loud that I'd like to use my empathic ability to help me recover from reactivity, kind of like, really? Oh, I guess I do want that. So just saying it out loud to someone else, having witnesses helps me think about it a little better. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. It's so powerful to speak our goals out loud like that, and also to write them down. I'm a big believer in journaling as a support for NVC practice and also for goal setting. So if you're the kind of person that likes to write a journal, then you could maybe make a note at the end of the call about what your strength is, what your edge is, and the practice that you are, and then revisit it again in a week or 2 weeks, and then see if you want to tweak the practice and improve it in any way. Anything you'd like to share about small group?
It really touches my heart to be in a conference with you all, to be invited in this peaceful moment. And we had a conversation between Nigeria, the States, and Germany in our little group. It was like we are all one, but it was such a big connection in this conversation. And I'm very thankful for that. I think it's a big contrast to what we see in the media happening every day around the world. So we need this energy. But what we talked, and I just said that my strength is to be in the moment. Due to things that happened to me, I learned that, and I'm thankful for that now. And my edge is not to be triggered by things that happen in the world. Little children running through minefields, stuff. That's very difficult for me not to be triggered.
Yeah, so you would really like to strengthen your skill in being able to recover from the reactivity that you experience.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this conversation.
I'm really glad you're here, and thank you for all that you do in the service of peace.
Namaste.
Is there anything that you would like to say?
It's really a pleasure participating in this program. In my small group, I was able to share with them my strengths, which is empathy, and the ability to be with other people's experience unconditionally. My edge is self-connection, because when I am triggered, I really find it difficult to reconnect.
Yeah, don't we all? That is such a sweet edge to have. It's such a human edge that I don't think anybody likes to be triggered. Nobody likes to feel separate, and that's why I'm so grateful for Marshall and all the other trainers that supported me in learning and integrating this practice to help me learn skills for recovering from reactivity. Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to share?
I really appreciate having a chance to participate in an exercise like this and to learn about creating practices for myself. That's a whole new idea. So I have one, and it's journaling, and I've heard it twice now this afternoon from you and from someone in my group. And so I'm going to be trying to make that a part of my life to improve my NVC skills.
Thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to share?
I enjoyed connecting through when my partner spoke, one of my partners spoke, and he spoke about self-acceptance as his edge. And I've been contemplating just after he did that, how I can use my strength of empathy to support me with self-acceptance. And it's occurring to me. This was all interconnected. My original share, his share, the other person's share, and then coming to this place of kind of seeing these shackles over here and offering them some empathy as a way to work my edge for self-acceptance. I'm like really grateful for the way you broke this down, and this is awesome.
I'm really glad you were here. Thank you so much. We have time for one or two more. Anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, this was powerful. The whole idea of recovering from reactivity that I've always been a man who's like wearing heart on sleeve and kind of unusual. I taught elementary school for 10 years. So feelings were something I guess I was comfortable with, but not me. Oh no, I shouldn't have feelings. And something about not feeling separate, that all human beings have these sensations and feelings. I'm just investigating right now, taking a class in mindfulness-based self-compassion. So powerful group today. And thank you for facilitating this all. It's really touched me deeply.
Thank you. I'm really glad to hear that. That's the kind of feedback that keeps me coming back for more. And is there anything that you would like to say?
It's almost beyond words for me. I'm just so grateful to be able to meet like this and have these discussions with so many people from different parts of the world. And so the connection and learning. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. And I'm just so grateful. I'm feeling so grateful right now. Thank you.
I'm just savoring your gratitude and also the smiling faces of all of you on the call as we start to transition out of the call. Dory and I will be back next month on NVC Academy to do another class. And hearing what I heard from you during your checkout, we're going to focus on recovering from reactivity and have some strategies that we have been using for the last few years and been teaching to help folks to recover from reactivity in a wholehearted way where you actually honor it and honor your own needs as well as the needs of others and help to navigate those challenging situations. Thank you so much.